When you grow up in a blue-collar neighborhood where dads labor in factories and moms measure aspirations by packed lunchboxes, dreams for a better life don't have to travel very far. For me, the journey started on the 8:05 morning train from Mannheim Station to Wrigley Field. I took that train and then two buses at least 100 times to sit in the bleachers and watch my beloved Chicago Cubs, never once appreciating that each trip was a divine wink of dreams and a life to come. My mind drifts back often to my boyhood days in Franklin Park, Illinois. It was an honest place to grow up, a place where you knew the mailman and the mayor, the dog catcher and the dentist. Parents worked, worried, then worked harder. Kids played baseball, went to school, then played more baseball. We played anywhere we could, in vacant lots without real bases, on the streets, and in organized leagues during the summer. We talked about the big leagues, memorized statistics of our favorite players, and dreamt of playing for the Cubs. A few even dreamt of playing for the White Sox. I thought about those carefree times as I sat alone and stared at my cell phone. I was 2,000 miles away, in Los Angeles, and the sun seemed to be shining brighter than it ever had. Back home, rain was falling. So were the leaves. Seasons were changing. Autumn was turning to winter. My wife, Gail, who I had known for 34 years since our days together at East Leiden High School, was wrapping up a shopping trip with her mother in the Chicago suburb of Elk Grove Village. Their dinner plans suddenly got canceled when I called. In Oxford, Ohio, our daughter Jenna was having an early dinner with two college girlfriends in an apartment near the campus of Miami of Ohio. Her dinner was interrupted when Gail called. At the family home in Wooddale, 15 minutes west of Franklin Park, our son Lou answered the call from Gail and got a lump in his throat. My brother Doug had left Chicago at 6 a.m. for a day-long in-and-out business trip to Houston. I reached him as he sat in a window seat on an American Airlines jet, engines turning, on the tarmac about to take off for the return trip to O'Hare International Airport. Doug was off the phone in less than a minute and hustling to make two quick calls of his own before the plane took off. The first was to his wife, Val, asking her to meet him at the curb outside O'Hare with a fresh set of clothes when he landed around 8:30 p.m. The other call was to his travel agent, who booked him on a 10 p.m. flight to Los Angeles. By the time he landed in California in the middle of the night, after traveling more than 3,700 miles in one day, he had 40 voicemails on his cell phone. Word was quickly spreading. Two of the last calls I made that day were to my mom and to my Uncle Frank. My mom was in a retirement home in the Chicago suburb of Schaumburg, struggling with the early stages of dementia. Mercifully, she was still sharp enough to savor the news. My voice cracked and I wept as we shared our feelings. Uncle Frank, my late dad's lone surviving brother, couldn't have been prouder. He broke into tears of joy before I could. Then we both wept, knowing how wonderful it would have been if only Ned Lewis Coletti Sr. could have been there to share the moment. The day Frank McCourt made me the 10th general manager in the long, proud history of the Los Angeles Dodgers, November 15, 2005, was monumental for the Coletti family. I had just finished my 25th year in Major League Baseball, an accomplishment that was beyond my wildest dreams. And now I would be taking over one of the most storied franchises in all of sports, a bit of franchise that was reeling after its second-worst season since World War II. I was 51, the age at which my dad died of lung cancer, not far from where he made a home for his wife Dolores and sons Doug and me in Franklin Park. At the age when my dad was saying goodbye, I was saying hello to one of the most prestigious positions in professional sports. Before it was over, I would get to know some of the best players and people in baseball's amazing history. I would become friends with men who I had idolized when they played. We assembled teams that won with hustle and class. I added future Hall of Famers at the trading deadline and signed some of the best of all time. Over the course of my career, I had the chance to work for three of the most fabled franchises in the game, my hometown Cubs, the San Francisco Giants, and the Dodgers. I became one of the highest-ranking executives in baseball history to work for both the Giants and the Dodgers, two longtime rivals. And for one day, that magical day in November 2005, I actually worked for both of them, officially changing from one to the other at high noon. I almost wished I'd had the chance somewhere along the line to work for the St. Louis Cardinals. Then I could say I worked both sides at two greatest rivalries in the history of the National League, the Cubs and Cardinals in the Midwest and the New York, California Dodgers and Giants. Almost. Then again, it would have been bittersweet to work for the Cardinals. They were the team I disliked most growing up, and the way my career unfolded, I disliked them even more as time went on. Over the years, I dined with Sinatra and Scully and got to drink into the wee small hours of the morning with Santo, Carey, and Brickhouse, and a long parade of wordsmiths, some extremely talented and some not so much, who earned their livings the way I began my career, writing about sports. I saw the World Series.